What do you think it would be like to be on a free love commune?
Oh. Hey everyone, welcome to our podcast. It's Saturday, May 5th, and we're here recording at Grinnell College. I'm Aaron.
I'm John.
And I'm Annette.
And today we're going to be talking about the history of polyamory.
What do you think it would be like to be on a free love commune?
I have a lot of thoughts about communes because it's the beginning of cult behavior, which I don't love. I think the group thing is very scary, and free love gets a lot of people hurt because some people interpret free love as like, I can be shitty to people, which is not what it means. So like, in an ideal utopia, it'd be great, but I don't think it exists.
That sounds awesome. I went to an orgy a couple weeks ago, and that's what I assumed it would be like. And it was really good.
Awesome. Yeah.
Lots of people told me I was pretty, and I liked it.
Lesbian farmers. And like, yeah, basically that.
I think it'd be interesting, but just because the people would be interesting. Just because the mentalities that you'd have, in my opinion, are really beautiful. To be able to have that. So I just think, like, everybody thinks about the sex too much, but I would love the conversations.
In this podcast, we're investigating two polyamorous intentional communities, the Oneida community in 1850s New York and the Carista commune from the 1970s to the 1990s in New York and San Francisco. Because these communities seemed radical in terms of their sexual practices, we were interested in learning if Oneida and Carista truly challenged heteropatriarchy, or if they simply engaged in deviant sexuality while upholding dominant norms. Additionally, we'll use these two communities to compare the first and second waves of polyamory to see if the relationship between heteropatriarchy and poly communities has changed over time.
Polyamory is the practice of maintaining romantic relationships with multiple people with the knowledge and consent of everybody involved. The consent part is important. If a guy is cheating on his girlfriend, for example, it's not polyamory, it's infidelity. And polygamy, like in Mormon communities, it's technically considered to be a subset of polyamory, but polyamory generally carries the connotation of everybody involved in the relationships having more than one partner. The history of polyamory is almost as long as human civilization itself, but in America, it's a bit shorter. Historians have characterized American polyamory as coming in three waves. One in the 19th century connected with the Transcendentalist movement, one around the 1960s and 70s connected with post-war counterculture, and a third one happening right now, facilitated by the rise of the internet and its many subcultures. Participants in the first two waves often engaged in polyamory in the context of intentional communities.
The Fellowship for Intentional Communities, FIC, defines intentional communities as a group of people who live together or share common facilities and who regularly associate with each other on the basis of explicit common values. The explicit organizational values are cooperation, sustainability, social justice, nonviolence, and non-coercion. Most people know about intentional communities through religious groups such as the Amish or the Shakers, or hippie communes in the 60s. However, intentional communities can take many forms based on the goals of the group. Because these communities often involve avoiding certain societal structures such as capitalism or the education system, they provide the opportunity to redefine societal structures. For instance, some communities attempt to redefine traditional family structures and romantic relationships. However, members often still participate in traditional society in some way due to their traditional upbringing.
We're going to talk about the Oneida community now. The Oneida community was a polyamorous intentional community founded by John Humphrey Noyes in 1848 in Oneida, New York, and was later dissolved in 1881. One of its most integral institutions was complex marriage, where people pursued relationships with more than one person at the same time. I sat down with John to discuss complex marriages and whether the community's ideals and practices challenged or upheld heteropatriarchy. John, could you tell us a bit about the founding ideals of the Oneida community?
Yeah, it was founded on Christian ideals. Mm-hmm. Its leader, John Noyes, looked at the Bible, specifically Matthew 22:30, which says, "The angels in heaven neither marry nor are given in marriage." And so he looked at that and thought, if we want to establish a heaven on earth, we need to abolish traditional marriage, where monogamous relationships, where men basically own their wives.
And how did polyamory work in practice in these communities?
Well, it was pretty complex. It was actually called complex marriage. Mm-hmm. The idea behind it was that any man can sleep with any woman so long as they both agree to do so.
And what did this agreement entail?
Basically, there was an intermediary, which is kind of weird. It was always started by a man, and the man would ask an intermediary to ask whatever woman he wanted to sleep with to have sex. And the intermediary would get the response of the woman. And the idea behind this was so that women wouldn't feel too pressured to say yes to have sex with men, which was pretty progressive for its time.
Okay. And so were these polyamorous relationships solely heterosexual?
Yes, but there is evidence of a sort of proto-gayness in it, because romantic relationships were not emphasized. They actually railed against special love, which was traditional romantic relationships, and tried to keep that separated. People found more opportunity for sustained contact amongst people of similar genders. And so there's evidence of people, of two women in particular, writing, like, basically love letters to each other. And so that, even if that they wouldn't have labeled themselves as gay, it seems pretty gay.
Right. And can you tell us more about the family structures and how they might have aligned with the community's ideals?
Yeah. So basically, Oneida was thought of like one big extended family. There are a few biological families which are intertwined. There's actually a lot of inbreeding, which was a little weird. But the most important note is that basically children were raised communally. They would take babies away from their mothers as soon as, like, there was an opportunity for the children to be weaned. And so it was just basically an entire community and no traditional family structures whatsoever.
All right. And so would you say this promoted some sort of equality of the sexes?
That's a pretty big question. Mm-hmm. Basically, an important thing to note is that John Noyes, the leader, people really looked up to him. He was actually conflated with God, because he was the one who interpreted, the first one to interpret the Bible the way he did. And so basically, like, his theology made the community structured the way it did. And so he would intervene a lot in people's lives and just micromanage the way everybody existed. And so he was enormously powerful, but over men and women. And so it's hard to differentiate to what extent was this, like, patriarchal versus just Noyes having a lot of power. Though it is interesting to note that he still believed, as many Americans did at the time, that women were spiritually inferior to men, and that men needed to educate women in this way. And it was actually done a lot through sex. So there's still a lot of patriarchy that leaked through the community.
Yeah, so clearly we see that Noyes seems to view women as very different in their ability to create sexual pleasure. And in general, how do you think women felt in this community?
That's a pretty big question. I guess an important thing to note is that when the community was on its decline and fell apart, women were really afraid of going back to traditional relationships, because they thought that Oneida gave them a lot of freedom. At the same time, women still faced a lot of pressure to have sex. There's evidence in memoirs of women kissing and having sex with men that they weren't really attracted to, just because they felt like that was the nice thing to do. And Noyes and probably other men also viewed women as being different as in their ability to create sexual pleasure, and thought that was, like, a big deal, and thought that women needed to get better at pleasing men. And presumably men, there's also similar pressure on men, but there's not really any evidence in the historical record for that. Furthermore,
Because women couldn't be mothers, that caused them to have a lot of distress.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure if that in itself was evidence of patriarchy so much as women retained patriarchal values from outside society, telling them that they should be mothers, they should be the sole parent of their children. And lastly, because there's no special love, this mm-hmm. caused women to have a lot of distress because obviously they wanted to, you know, spend time with the people they were most attracted to. But mm-hmm. men also felt really distressed by this.
Right.
Ultimately, it is difficult to discern the extent to which patriarchy affected the ideals and functioning of the United community. For the most part, women felt dissatisfied due to the aspects of the community structure that discourage mother-child relationships and close bonding with their sexual partners. Men in the community reported a similar disconnection. In the end, while the Oneida community does seem patriarchal, it is important to emphasize its progressive nature for its time. To compare, we should look at another intentional community from the 1970s and analyze whether its polyamorous structures were more progressive. The Carissa community was a utopian community founded in New York City in 1956 by John Peltz Pressman. The Carissa community centered on the ideals of polyfidelity and was one of the first communities to practice balanced non-monogamy. Carissa was a community that spanned from New York City to San Francisco. Erin and I shall now discuss how the Carissa community set out to destabilize heteropatriarchy. Often, intentional communities are founded on a specific set of ideals. So what ideals was the Carissa intentional community founded on?
Yeah, so the Caristans created a social contract in their handbook, and one of the things they noted was they had a principle of equality. Specifically, they listed non-sexism, non-ageism, and non-racism. They also set up democratic principles of decision-making, so every member had a voice in decisions within the community.
Mm-hmm. And how did they structure their community to enforce these ideals?
Yeah, so one of the most important structures of their community that's relating to sort of gender and sexuality as our topic was polyfidelity, which was a new sexual relationship structure invented by the Caristans. Specifically at Carista, polyfidelity was a closed relationship structure between a group of partners, and they labeled their group's best friend identity clusters. Groups of highly compatible best friends who all lived together as a family unit and shared sexual intimacy. They had this balanced rotational sleeping schedule between members just of the opposite sex. So each man-woman couple would stay together one night and then rotate to a new partner the next night.
Mm-hmm. And would you say this was different from other types of polyamory?
Yeah, so one of the members of Carista, Even Eve, noted that polyfidelity was the first structure to challenge traditional unbalanced polygamy,
mm-hmm.
like when one man marries multiple wives. In this case, there are many men and many women, and they're supposed to be sort of an equal number of each gender.
Ooh, so did this mean they engaged in sort of deviant or non-traditional sexual practices?
Yeah, not really. Their social contract actually has a section titled Wholesome Sexual Practices.
Mm-hmm.
So they had rules against masturbation, group sex, public displays of affection, sex works, BDSM.
Mm.
They weren't really radical. One scholar also even talked about how their community had strong echoes of traditional monogamy based on this sort of coupling rotation. So they were pretty boring in their sexual practices, although they did put an emphasis on women's pleasure, and male members were expected to ensure pleasure for female partners.
Mm-hmm. So would you say they were always practicing heterosexual sexual practices?
Yes. So the sexual relationships were explicitly heterosexual, even to the point that relationships between members of the same sex were labeled as, like, starling brothers and starling sisters. So clearly, like, the structures of the group and sort of the rules about the sleeping schedule even, like, prevented the exploration of any non-heterosexual feelings.
And so did their family structures align with their feminist ideals somewhat?
Yeah, the family structures were more feminist, I'd say. They had a policy of multiple parenting of children with supposedly non-sexist parental roles. So all members were supposed to raise kids. And members talked about this really took the burden off of mothers and parents in general. They also initially had a policy that each woman could only have one child. However, eventually members shifted to a policy of voluntary childlessness, and they required vasectomies from new male members, so there weren't any kids. So this sort of took care of the problem of, like, the sexism of, you know, having to be a mother.
So it was said that a lot of women in the Carista community were unhappy because of the structure, and would you say this was a failure of polyfidelity or the unique structures of this community?
Yeah, so based on my research, looking at sort of the views of the members and also outside sociology scholars who have, like, come into the community, people really seem to think that polyfidelity ended up working well for some of the clusters, and that polyfidelity wasn't really the reason that Carista eventually failed and that women were not comfortable. The problem was really more the cult-like aspects of the group, specifically surrounding Judd, their founder. He ended up being sort of domineering and really imposed patriarchal leadership on this group that was supposed to be really democratic and equal, even to the point where women in his cluster were very unhappy because he ended up manipulating them to prevent new men from joining their group. So in the end, Carista really sort of failed just because of this patriarchal man coming in and taking over.
Although Carista set out to be a radical polyamorous community with full equality of the sexes, the community ended up upholding many patriarchal norms. The structured rotational sleeping schedule enforced heterosexuality, and the various rules surrounding sexual practices ended up replicating monogamous, conservative sexuality in many respects. Moreover, the patriarchal founder caused many problems and made women feel uncomfortable. However, the community is still notable for inventing a new relationship and family structure and for their explicit goals of gender equality.
So, Erin and John, can you tell us a bit more about how the Oneida community and Carista compare?
Yeah, so one similarity I noticed between both of these communities is that they were both started by and maintained by these really powerful, domineering, straight white men. And these men seem to bring in a lot of sexism and patriarchy into the communities that may not have been there if the communities were founded by someone else.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think the leaders and also just the way the communities were structured played a lot into how people, how patriarchy played a role in people's lives. Like, at Carista, because polyfidelity was so strict, it prevented people from exploring feelings of non-heterosexuality. While in Oneida, because romantic relationships were de-emphasized entirely, it enabled people to have, to experience gay-like relationships, though obviously that was in part because homosexuality hadn't really been invented yet as a sexual orientation. And at the same time, with Oneida, the fact that special love, the structure of it was so set against it, that also caused people a lot of distress. It seems like structures directly correlated with the amount of distress people felt.
I think bringing up that point about the sort of queer-type relationships is a really good example of how Oneida seemed very progressive for its time, especially compared to Carista. I was really surprised by this. Oneida seemed to completely restructure sexual and family relationships, while at Carista, the relationships honestly seemed pretty normal, aside from the fact that each member had multiple partners.
Yeah, and so we can see that both the Carista and Oneida showed influence of previously learned patriarchal beliefs. However, in the Oneida community, we saw that women sort of felt distressed due to the pressure, the patriarchal pressure to be mothers, and they weren't able to do so in the community, whereas the Carista felt more liberated. And so clearly these patriarchal ideals emanated from the fact that the members were raised in traditional sexist societies. The Oneida and Carrizo communities intended to create radical relationship structures, but these were not actually actualized. In understanding our positionality, it is important to recognize how socialization can undermine our intentions to radical activism.